This is Sophie, and you're listening to the Jew and the Gentile podcast.
I'm Charles Breton.
And I'm Chris Henson. And together we are
a Jew
and a Gentile
walk into a bar mitzvah.
Wishing I could change the things that I screwed up. What am I supposed to do? I can't give up. You know I can't give up.
Oh, welcome into episode 72 of our podcast.
A Jew and a Gentile walk into a bar mitzvah. The podcast.
And we've made it to 72 episodes. And they said it wouldn't last past 70.
Yeah, we crapped out a long time ago, Charles.
Yeah. I think they were talking about how often you swear. So
I have not said it. Well, it's still early.
Well, we just started, so it's still early. But we do try to tackle those tough, vexing questions of life and faith and theology. Things like when you tell someone there are 4 billion stars, they always believe you. But if you tell them that the paint on the wall is still wet, they have to check. Why is that?
Inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah. Well, you know, they can believe 4 billion stars, but they can't believe that the paint is wet. Anyway, so our podcast, besides our website and iTunes, we're also available at theologycorner.net, and we are now available on Stitcher. So if that's how you get your podcasts.
You can ignore us in 3 different venues. Wow. 4 if you count our own website. 5 with Twitter, 6 with Facebook. Mm-hmm. There are literally endless ways to ignore.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Exactly.
Okay. As we always do, we want to thank our sponsors, acknowledge them, because they make this possible, because they keep our beards nice and they get us drunk and give us cigars. So without them, this podcast would not be at all bearable for you.
In that order?
Well, because I'm starting with Men of the Beard.
Ah, beard oil.
Yes, beard oil.
I've enjoyed mine, and just like the last bottle, my wife is doesn't care for the new fragrance either. So, oh well.
Well, obviously, because we heard that clap of thunder. Yeah, that the storm hasn't reached me yet, but it will soon.
Oh, it will. It's a bloody nightmare out there.
Yeah. So, Pastor Gnar, Brandon Mauser, good people.
Pastor Gnar, our favorite Christian shaman.
Yeah, and he gifted me a pair of Christian pagan prayer beads.
Christian pagan prayer beads.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
for the Jew.
For the Jew.
We're trying to, you know, enter as many faiths as possible. Also, it's very special thank you to Virgil Kane Low Country Whiskey. They really helped us out for our podcast at Wild Goose.
Full house.
They sent us 2 bottles of whiskey so we could get the audience drunk. So everyone
had a
good time.
Which you proceeded to do over 2 days.
Yeah, well, 2 different audiences. They had some wonderful gifts that we gave to our guests, Becky Savell and Dana Trent, and some giveaways that we gave out to the audience. So that was very special. So thank you to them. Also, Pipe and Pint, the best humidor in the Southeast.
Is that the one on Spring Garden?
If you're talking about Spring Garden in Greensboro, yeah.
Right. Because they haven't opened the Haynestown one.
Not that I know of. That's getting pushed back.
But we didn't need Pipe and Pint in Winston because we have Top Leaf Cigar Lounge.
We have Top Leaf and Cigar Lounge in Winston.
Way better.
And in Ashburn, we have Four Saints Brewing Company.
Oh, I almost forgot about those guys. How was Beer and Hymns?
Beer and Hymns was great, as always. Kristen, now Mitchell, does a great job. And we're going to be starting in October on the second Tuesday of the month. A group called Drinking Religiously. It's going to be a Bible study / theological conversation /
oh, we're getting grins from our guests there.
Let's get drunk on really good beer.
So
that'll be starting. So look for that. That'll be coming out soon. So if you're in Ashburn on the second Tuesday of the month starting in October. So Chris, you're not currently smoking a cigar because you're in your new house.
I think this is the first podcast from the new house.
Yeah, it is.
I can't remember. Is it? We had our first hearth Saturday.
Yes, we did.
Really, it was just you walking out of the house, warming and smoking in my carport. But
yeah, well, that counts.
Others joined you.
Yeah.
And our dear friend Sammy didn't die smoking a cigar this time, which was, you know,
that was good.
Remember last time I gave him a cigar.
Yeah. but I'm sure you're still going to review something for us.
You know, and I it's been a number of weeks and I cannot find my notes on it, but a cigar that's now at Top Leaf, Jeffrey Amendola.
Oh, yeah.
We did an event a few weeks ago, Bull City Tobacco, which, if nothing else, anytime you can smoke near Duke, that's a good thing in my book. But the cigars were exquisite. And I had the red label. I think that's the Maduro.
Yeah, I think.
And I think there's four other blends in that line. There were four other ones when I was there.
Yeah, they have a Connecticut Shade and a Habano and a Sumatra.
Sumatra, four total. It was exquisite. A lot of earthiness, coffee notes, and it had a real sweetness to it. The thing that also impressed me was the construction. Because you think, like, well, this is a boutique, and sometimes that can be hit and miss. You know, you might get really good flavor, but poor construction. You very rarely get both. But this one, you know, looking in the box, I was kind of skeptical. Two puffs in, I am no longer a skeptic. I'm a believer. Mm-hmm. It was really good, and look forward to trying the other three blends.
I enjoyed it also when I was there for that event.
Right.
And what I have, though, is something very special. I've been waiting for this to come out. Felix Azzeline has a line of cigars he calls the Ego line. And this is the Ego White Label that they just released for the Cigar and Pipe Show in Las Vegas, the big trade show.
Right.
So there's not a whole lot on it out there. They kind of kept it a secret. What we do know is that the wrapper is a Nicaraguan Criollo 98, which is a wonderful leaf. It's an Indonesian binder.
Okay.
Interesting. And Nicaraguan long fill leaves for the fill in it. And right off the bat, you get some wonderful nuttiness from the Criollo. And I'm guessing from the Nicaraguan and the Indonesian binder, there's that sweet, leathery, oiliness. I know you didn't play sports as a young man. I did. So that wonderful, delicious smell when you have a really well-oiled glove with lots of glove oleum on it, and you get the leather and the sweet from the oil.
Right. I don't know what the hell y'all do in Florida, but we don't smoke baseball gloves in North Carolina. For more of a basketball country up here.
Got it really oiled well, you just stick your face in it, and it's such a great smell. We couldn't do snuff, so we had to get high somehow on the field. And then there's also...
Never use snuff. I never played baseball.
Yeah, no. But there's also...
Being outside in the sunshine, that's not... That's for the birds.
Yeah. Well, you intellectuals. You intellectuals, you're all the same. Well, just an ACC snob, that's why. That's why
I like right, because you're like one weekend away from being an SEC fan again.
Yeah.
Right up until the football season ends and it's just like the Kentucky show for a few months.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got to play the Blue Devils this year, so, you know.
Yeah, well, but we also have baseball.
And
softball. Well, we've got championship in baseball, softball, swimming, gymnastics.
Right.
Soccer.
Right. All that at Florida State University, folks.
No.
I could say Georgia. I could say UGA.
Then we'd end this real quick.
Right.
Anyway, and there's also a lot of nice spice in this one, more than any of the other Ego cigars.
I saw you wrapped around at that. The Israel Palestine split. We don't have any problem talking about SEC football, because there's no such thing as ACC football other than you know Clemson. They brought in Miami just in Florida State.
Clemson.
I forgot about yeah. The best community college in South Carolina, from what I understand.
Well, it's also probably the best state-run Christian school in the country.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Dabo requires his athletes to attend chapel. They're marked off if they don't. He's got a team chaplain who checks attendance.
Wow.
Yeah. He's very strict.
That settles that debate. Apparently Protestant Jesus is the one to worship.
Yeah.
Notre Dame in years.
Yeah, but Notre Dame's private.
Yeah, but they're Catholic.
Yeah, but I'm saying right. Clemson, you know, they're a public school, so that's why they got to go Protestant, because, you know, there's more Protestants in the public sector, so.
Right.
And now for something completely different.
Men of the Beard Beard Oil. Men of the Beard is a celebration of men's facial hair. Whether you've got a mustache, a goatee, a week's growth, or working on your yeard, they want you to celebrate what you've got and give you the tools to make it the best it can be. All of their beard care products are artisan crafted and hand poured, They intentionally source all of their ingredients from small businesses whose agricultural practices are both ethical and sustainable. All of their beard care products are vegan friendly. What does that mean to you? It means you're getting a high quality, all natural product that will be here for a long time to come because they believe not raping our planet is a real good thing. Men of the Beard, Beard Oil.
Anyway, we do have a guest. She's been waiting patiently.
Yeah, thank God. We're out of material.
Yeah, I'm done. We're just going to turn the show over to her. Actually, we have someone that started following when was in the interfaith chat that Meredith Gould would moderate. And this person was there often. I enjoyed her comments and her input, and so started reading some of her blog. Sarah Beth Kaplan, she's an author, editor, freelance writer. Her spiritual memoir, Confessions of a Prodigal Daughter, was an Amazon bestseller in the personal growth category. And her writing has been featured in Huffington Post, Sun Magazine, Lilith, and Christians for Biblical Equity. She also says that dry humor is her love language, and no pun is beneath her. And so we will certainly put that to the test.
Right.
Because she has graciously agreed to join us on our podcast. She has a very interesting faith story, and it fits in well with our interfaith direction. So, Sarah Beth, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you.
So, for those who are not familiar with you and have not read your blog or Confessions of a Prodigal Daughter, you have a very interesting story. You were raised in a Reformed Jewish household, and yet you converted to Christianity. Had some interesting journeys through that, and have written quite a lot in your blog about those intersections of Judaism and Christianity and trying to balance those things. They've brought to you each in their own way. Why don't you, if you want to give a little background for our listener.
Let her tell the story, Charles.
That's what I was getting to. I was inviting her to tell the story of how you became a prodigal daughter.
Well, the prodigal daughter, it's an interesting reference because it means different things depending on which group you're talking to. For the Christian side of things, I was prodigal before becoming a Christian and then became found, so to speak, like the prodigal son who had wandered away for a time. And then according to the Jewish community, I'm still prodigal because I have not come back in the traditional sense. I've rediscovered a Jewish identity culturally and ethnically speaking, but it's not, you know, the same as practicing Judaism in a religious way, especially if you still, if you call yourself a follower of Jesus. So, I mean, no one's ever actually used that word to describe me, but I just thought it was an interesting way to interpret the story of the prodigal son. So that's how that happened. I just started writing about it initially because I wanted a timeline for myself, because Christians love good testimony and they would ask me, well, how did this happen? Especially given your background, this is so unlikely. And I realized that, you know, it wasn't just a simple answer like, you know, I prayed the prayer because I knew somebody and she led me to Christ or what have you, like you hear a lot. It went back to my childhood. It was literally a life story. And I just started writing an outline for myself and realized it was basically turning into an outline for a book. And I'd always wanted to write a book, but I grew up thinking I was going to be a young adult author or write children's books or something. So to start with a memoir about myself, and I was in my early 20s, so it seemed pretty ridiculous, but at the same time, it would be easier to just tell people, read my book, instead of let me tell you about my entire life from start to finish right now, when that's not what you asked.
Like we just asked you to do. So
Yeah, basically.
But also the opportunity to plug your book, because we like that too.
Right.
And maybe we'll get, don't tell the whole story, leave some mystery, so people will have to buy your book.
I mean, there's plenty of like twists and turns along the way that kind of funny, kind of awkward. You know, so it's not like a total spoiler, really. And if you are familiar with my blog, a lot of those have already been revealed. You know, so the book just puts it in a more cohesive format.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned, you're saying from your childhood, and you have on the blog that you should have known right away when your bat mitzvah was in a church. that this is going to be a different journey.
Yes, and especially as an English major who was taught about
oh dear goodness,
I mean, you can't look at something like that and not think that that was. I mean, it's either a huge coincidence or it was planned. I'm honestly not sure which. But yeah, we had some extended relatives and friends from New Jersey who were very Orthodox, and so when they saw this this church with a steeple with stained glass crosses in the windows, they're like, "Are we at the right place? Like, this can't be it." And so
I should have put that in the invitation.
I don't know if my mom warned them or not, but they're like, "Marcy, what is this? Like, your daughter's not actually having her bat mitzvah here, is she?" And she's like, "Well, actually, she is, because contrary to the stereotype, you don't actually, the Jews of Hudson, Ohio don't have money for a synagogue. So we're just using this for a while." And so yeah, there were crosses in the windows that I was awkwardly looking at while I recited my Torah portion. Another interesting layer to that story is not only was my bat mitzvah in a church and I was confronted literally with these crosses in my face as I was reading my Torah portion, but the Torah portion was actually about Sarah's death.
I was about to ask, what was the portion? Yeah.
Yeah. So Sarah dies. And, you know, in Christianity, you have this teaching about being born again, of a death to self. And so that my bat mitzvah was taking place in this building that was very prophetic, talking about like a death of my namesake that actually sort of became an interesting twist later on. Because the Sarah that I was born as, died figuratively and became Sarah Beth. So weird parallel there.
Yeah. another interesting story you tell when you, not quite the conversion part, but that you were seeking more when you were in college. And then being part of the campus life movement and so why don't you share a bit of that, how that sort of was part of the direction that you were moving toward?
Well, in hindsight, I can say that I would not recommend Campus Crusade for Christ for beginners. It's not a church, it's an outreach program, which is code for evangelism. Also, it's called Crusade. So they now go by CRU, like CRU.
And let me just clarify, I refer to it as campus life because back in my day,
there weren't even campuses.
No, they were campuses, but they were Campus Life, subtitle, Crusade for Christ.
Interesting.
So those guys, those folks here, they really
just
kept
referring to, "Oh no, we're just Campus Life Ministries." And it wasn't until you were there that they said, "Yes, we're Campus Life, Crusade for Christ."
They probably should put that in the title.
Same size font, or was that like underneath in smaller font? So
That was in smaller font and in hushed tones.
Yeah, they kind of got into similar controversies about that at my school. They would say like free pizza for freshmen.
Oh yeah, they partied all the time.
Campus logo on the poster.
So I'm curious about that interaction because just as a Christian, that group at NC State when I was there, that was anathema. I wanted to get as far from them as I humanly could. And I was still discerning a call into ministry with that point. So I'm all ears. I hear it with different ears than Charles, who showed up wondering what else was there besides the pizza. I wanted to find a flock of Gentiles who are desperately trying to make him repent.
Yeah, have a little bit of repentance and healthy doses of shame with your.
Well, and those are two.
Right.
Well,
what's maybe more Jewish than that?
But no, I just want to hear more because that's got me intrigued even more so than, yeah. I'm going to stop talking.
Well, I can only speak for my chapter.
Obviously. Right.
Yes.
I have no idea what it's like in other schools. And so for anyone listening who is a part of it or who knows somebody who's affiliated and it's nothing like this, ignore what I'm saying. Or at least, you know, chalk it up to the fact that I'm talking about Kent State and not whatever school you go to. Unless you do go to Kent and they've changed. I don't know. Anyway. It was shady, a lot of it. And I started going because a friend of mine went. And so I was not actually led to Christ through them, contrary to what a lot of people think. I became Christian of my own volition. And then after that was told by my Catholic friend. Interestingly, she was Catholic, but she chose a Protestant organization, probably so I wouldn't be scared away so easily. But, you know, she said, you need to get plugged in to a church group or some kind of group with other people, other Christians who can help you out, who can help you grow. And so it was so convenient, just living on campus. There was this group that was right there. They met in the a lecture hall every Thursday night. And so I guess that was kind of like my first exposure to church from the other side, because I'd gone with friends before, you know, for their religious ceremonies and things like that. So it was the first time that I was exposed to any kind of like Christian ritual now as someone who actually believed it. And it was so overwhelming. You know, they're focused on outreach. They're not really a church, so they don't really go over the basics. They kind of cater to people who grew up in that environment, and that's kind of like all they know. And so, you know, it's bent on like getting the message out and bringing people in. You know, so they want to reach people, the lost, as they were fond of calling people. And as soon as I started going, oh gosh, this was like so horrible for my introverted self, because people heard like the Jewish girl. And of course they had no idea how to deal with me. And so not only did they keep asking like, well, how did you come to know Christ? Like, we have to hear the story. But then they also didn't know what to do with the fact that I was worried that I was going to be considered an apostate because I became a Christian. That was like so foreign to them. They just didn't know what to do with me. And where the origins of my blog got started, before I even thought about writing a book, was the fact that even as somebody who had a very unconventional Christian testimony, I still did not fit the mold that they thought that I should. So they heard Jewish person who now believes in Jesus, and they asked me, so what part of the Bible was it that convinced you that Jesus was the Messiah? And I couldn't answer that question because there wasn't one. Like, I didn't even start reading the Bible until after I became a Christian. And of course, because I was a Christian, I thought I knew the Old Testament. I started with the New. And so, you know, I could not tell them, oh, it's Isaiah 53, the part about the suffering servant. You know, by his stripes we are healed, and the passage that you hear a lot on Easter and Good Friday. You know, I couldn't point to anything like that. I had no idea it was even there. If you had asked me anything about Old Testament prophecies, I would have looked at you completely with a blank stare on my face. Like, what are you talking about? So then from a Christian perspective, they tried to educate me about the Old Testament and say, well, oh, there are these passages here. Like, they clearly point to the Messiah. So like, if you can kind of squeeze these into your testimony when we witness to people and tell them that, I'm like, I can't do that. Like, that's not even how it happened for me. Like, really, it's just, I just thought the incarnation was cool. I mean, I grew up thinking like, I need a God that's personal. And God, as I was taught to him, as I was taught about him in Judaism, at least in my tradition, wasn't personal enough, at least not for what my spiritual needs were. And they didn't like that. They're like, no, like, we need you to, I mean, they didn't actually say it like this, but this is kind of how I interpret it. Like, we need you to kind of fit this mold so we can tell people. So
no, they want a poster child. They want, like, you know, a sound bite, something to look what we're doing. But that, having the Old Testament and Judaism church explained to people, that is one of Charles's favorite activities to engage with Christians in. I think I swear a lot.
Yeah, they're like, what are the secrets of Hillel, the Jewish students that are on campus, and how can we use you to, like, infiltrate? Like, I don't do this. I'm not going to do this. Don't make me.
Actually, crusade sounds a bit like an invasion by that story. So unlike the original ones.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Not less bloody, for sure.
So I resonated when you said, well, what passage converted you? And I'm like going, I'm ordained and couldn't answer that question. Now then. Because faith is more organic. It's been more of a journey, I think that was my issue with Campus Crusades when I was in college, was they wanted this very black and white world to exist. The irony is, you know, a family that were active in that and had a lot of friends, but there's something about that faith that is so black and white, point to this moment, give me the come to Jesus story, that when the reality of adult life set in, they abandoned that faith quicker than anything else. Because it didn't work. Mm-hmm. But I'm hearing in your story, and I may be conflating my own experience, but that more of an organic experience, it was a gradual journey, not sort of a all at once. Am I right on that, or is that?
Definitely. No, I mean, I will say there was a day in October that I wrote down in my journal that I thought was significant. And I remember that was the first time that I actually prayed using Jesus's name, which for me was a big deal. And I've been keeping a prayer journal since I was 12. So, you know, instead of writing Dear God, I started writing Dear Jesus. And so for me, the first time I ever did that was on October 8th. And so I guess if you have to, you know, put a label on it, sure, October 8th, 2008. Like, let's just go with that. But I would say that that process started so much sooner. Like, the interest was already there. My heart was already going in that direction. So I would not say, like, that's the day that I got saved. You know, like,
it's a milestone, it sounds like.
It is.
It's not the entire journey, just a point.
Right, yeah.
So you mentioned the incarnation, and I have, see, Charles and I have had this discussion on one of our podcasts, or maybe it was just while we were smoking and drinking, maybe both for all we know.
They kind of run together.
One big hazy smoke-filled room, where he asked me pretty much saying, you know, why are you Christian? What resonated with that growing up? And I have to say the incarnation was what I actually responded using. And much the same language, again, from my perspective and experience of a God that is with us, which it's not that Charles doesn't believe in or Jews don't believe in a God that is with us, but it's different.
Yeah.
Or anyway, but I just resonate when you said that. I actually typed him a message going, ooh,
yeah.
We've had this talk before. But yeah. Speak some more about that. That's because I'm, yeah.
Well, for me, the personal God ties in with the history of the Catholic calendar of saints. Because I grew up with Catholics, my best friends are Catholic. And so reading about them and this God that they worshiped and in some cases even died for, they wrapped together. You know, so I was interested in saints and then I had to know more about this God that they thought was worthy of, like, you know, facing a martyr's sword for. So part of it was like kind of, you know, as an adolescent thinking, well, I want to be the next Joan of Arc. Like, I want to be a martyr. That sounds really cool. Obviously really naive, having no idea what that entails, but also just being really attracted to the idea of a God who knew what it was like to suffer, who knew what it was like to have a body and all the pitfalls that come with that.
That was my next note. The suffering servant, but then to go to that, you know, a God that not only is with us, but a God that endures pain. Mm-hmm. A God that is not divorced from the human experience.
Yeah.
But it is in yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I watched my dad slowly be crippled with cancer for most of my childhood, experienced sexual abuse in college. And so the idea that Jesus, while he did not experience the same kind of bodily suffering, at least knew what it was to have physical pain, to be betrayed by people that he thought were on his side, that he could trust. And those were the things, I think, that really drew me in. Because, like, God kind of in the sky, as I was sort of taught about him. I mean, I was taught about God and I wasn't. It was a Reformed household. My parents are very non-religious. I'm sure if you ask what religion they are, they will say that they're Jewish, but they don't really practice. They don't really believe. And so any exposure I got about God was always in synagogue. And he was just always, like, he was distant. He's like he was kind of like that stereotypical, like, pie in the sky kind of person. And I just always thought, like, well, that God can't relate to my life. Like, he's not right. Realize there's more to it than that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna
piss off all or however many of our Reformed listeners
too,
and also our Orthodox listeners at the same time. So this is why I'm a conservative too. You know, so much of the Reformed movement for a lot of its history until maybe the last 40, 50 years, put a lot of emphasis on social justice and social action as the way to be Jewish and de-emphasize a lot of spirituality, a lot of the connectedness to the divine that is present in a lot of Judaism. And for my generation, a lot of people left looking at and became Buddhist or Hindu. To find that spirituality, yeah, and so I'm not surprised that, you know, even if your family was more active than the Reformed movement, that God would still be distant because their emphasis was always on human action.
So Charles, I know because we've had this talk as well, probably after the same. That is not a perspective that I've experienced with you of God being this distant other.
Yeah.
That's that. So
well, that's because I'm a devotee of Rambam and Heschel.
So how long did you make it this week? 32 minutes.
32 minutes. Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, 32 minutes.
That'll be a personal record. Before I mention, which by the way, we're We're now changing. Rambam is now Rambam, B-O-M-B, because he is the bomb.
Of course.
May God have mercy on your soul.
He does.
Wherever Rambam's at, he's rolling over in sarcophagus grave.
Tiberius is where he is.
All right. Well, he's rolling over.
And I've been to his grave, by the way. It's very nice. Very simple. This is this little courtyard, graveyard. Very simple. It's got a nice tree, a little bench.
I went there. I went to Jesus' in Jerusalem. Wasn't a damn thing there. Funny. Completely empty.
Yeah.
They're horrible. They're sacrilicious.
Manischewitz.
That's one of our, like, we can swear in public. Yeah. We can swear in front of Baptist curse word.
Yeah.
Using the name of a wine, no less.
Yes.
We are stretching the definition of wine.
It's the only good use of that product that there is. But anyway, I want to get back to your story and touching on some other things, because it is really interesting. I definitely recommend, and we'll put your link up on our page. You know, you have some really interesting blog posts and reading them, you know, some of the questions that you had asked yourself and others and trying to find things, you know, I then said, well, yeah, what about that? And it is very provocative in that sense. One of the things that you've written on a couple of times, it's in a few places, is the difference between being a convert to Christianity versus being a Messianic Jew.
Oh gosh, this is my pet topic.
Yes, that's why I've been waiting for, to bring that up, because that is something that people don't understand, and it's something that gets used a lot to try to convert Jews. Well, you know, we believe the same thing, so just accept Christ as your savior. And, you know, look, there are Messianic Jews. It's in your Bible.
Yeah.
Right. It's usually at the barrel of a gun or point of a spear when that's being asked in past history.
Yeah. But if you want to riff a little on that, because you raise some interesting points, because it is something that a lot of people don't quite understand, that difference.
Yeah. Jews and Christians both, I find, are very misinformed about what that means. Like, you know, a Jewish person hears, like, oh, so you're a Messianic Jew, not realizing it's technically a branch of Christianity that actually has, I would say, more in common, doctrinally speaking, with evangelicals than anything to do with Judaism. Another thing that they don't know, and forgive me if I'm preaching to the choir here.
Neither of us can sing, so probably not.
Well, but then a lot of the people in that movement are actually Gentile. They were not Jewish. They did not grow up Jewish at all. They either, to describe the guy who stalked me in seminary, have a heart for Israel, or they're just really interested in Judaism. They have what I was called Jew envy, and that's just kind of a way to merge that interest with their religious practice. And I kind of dabbled in it for a little bit, because also through Campus Crusade, there was a girl there who, she was part of that movement, and I saw her from across the room, because she had this giant Star of David with Yeshua in Hebrew inside it. And I didn't see that until I was up close to her, but I saw the Star of David and was like, oh my gosh, like, this is God sending me a sign. Like, there's someone else like you. Go over there and talk to her. I mean, nice girl. You know, we were friends for the duration of our college experience together, but, you know, she was from a Gentile family. She thinks that there might be, like, some Jewish blood somewhere, like an aunt or uncle once removed or whatever, but not enough for, you know, to, like, qualify for Aliyah for Israel or anything like that. As the rabbis are concerned, they'd be like, no, it's not enough. But anyway, she was like just Jewish enough, I guess, to qualify. And so she took me to her temple or synagogue, churchagogue. I have no idea.
Churchagogue. That's hashtaggable.
That's hashtaggable.
I have no idea what you call it, but she insisted that I go with her, and she offered to buy me Starbucks because I was going to get up early on a Saturday and go. So I'm like, all right, I'll do anything for free Starbucks. So she picked me up at my dorm, got my Starbucks, and we went. And okay, I didn't tell her this until much later, because she was so enthusiastic about it. She was so convinced that I would love it, but I was thoroughly creeped out. I really was. They had all the hymns and the chants and the prayers that I was familiar with, but they insuded Yeshua HaMashiach in the middle of them, Jesus the Messiah. You know, it just, I don't know, I kind of got the words add Hebrew and stir came to my mind. Like, this was basically a church service, but they waved really flags. The men wore the tallises and the kippot, and the women wore, like, Orthodox garb, like the skirts and other head coverings. And, you know, everybody looked the part. They really did. Mm-hmm. But then they were chanting about Jesus, and I just thought this isn't right. Like, I wanted some kind of balance, but it's like a garment with all the seams showing. Like, it wasn't this seamless, perfect thing that I was looking for. And upon
a powerful metaphor, that is stealing that.
Thanks. You know, just upon further investigation, it just didn't occur to me. I still was not theologically knowledgeable enough about Judaism at that point to really say what the differences were between Christianity and Judaism, but everything, all the hallmarks that you will find in a typical evangelical service were there. Emphasis on sin. We're all sinners. We all need redemption. We need a middleman to come and be that sacrifice for us. Things you will never, ever hear in any synagogue. Reform, conservative, Orthodox, like, never hear that. And they would say that, but then they would read from the Torah. And, you know, it wasn't until years later, I was in seminary, and they actually had a Messianic Jewish program designed with the intention of witnessing to Jewish people and bringing them into Christianity. And almost all the people that I met in there, except for a couple of the professors, they were Gentile. And there was a guy who saw my high tattoo and immediately thought that I was God's answer for a wife. To be his missionary wife in Israel. I was already dating my not yet husband at the time, and that was a whole different story that I won't go into right now, but it was basically through him that I realized just how theologically different the two faiths are, and that it was not enough to just, you know, as I said before, like, add Jesus and stir. They're theologically different, they teach different things, and even if you could convince a Jewish person that Jesus is the Messiah that they're looking for, you still have all these other issues to contend with. You still have
like the fact that he doesn't meet the criteria.
Like any part of the Apostles' Creed, if you want to just go from the Christian side.
Yeah, you still have to convince him that he was born terrible, that, you know, he needs salvation and he can't do it on his own. And, you know, he may say, well, what about Yom Kippur? Like, I atoned for my sins then. Well, no, that's not enough. And you're doing it by yourself. Mm-hmm. So, like, you're missing the last puzzle piece, essentially.
Yeah, Charles didn't get that whole original sin out there in Genesis. Yeah. He keeps missing that.
You have so many other things to add to it. And I just realized, like, okay, from who the Messiah is and what the Messiah should be, they differ. On the issue of sin, they differ. On the issue of heaven or hell, big difference.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's so many differences. And finally, I realized, and, you know, I even said to that guy, and I think this was like the final nail in the coffin that would have been our future marriage, like, no, like, this isn't working. Like, there's just too many differences, and I feel like it's really dishonest of you to say like that they can go together. It's just, if you knew anything about either faith, and of course that made him furious, and that was part of the reason I quit seminary, actually. Just like terrible and furious that I poked holes in his theology.
Both so much with evangelicals, their obsession, their addiction with apologetics. I know that's one for Charles and I were like,
yeah,
you're answering questions that most of the world really doesn't give a shit about, never have, or answering questions that most people seeking don't have. It seems like a dead art, but they're it's more about securing their own doubts than actually answering questions. But one of the things I just picked up on in your sharing, and then, of course, my own experience with Campus Crusade and those type groups, is I've never heard in Charles's accounts of his Judaism that guilt about or fear of God has ever been a motivator. And again, Charles can't speak for all of Judaism, although most weeks I expect him to.
Guilt only comes from the mothers.
Yes.
That's where you get the Jewish guilt. But also, Heschel, and mainly all the rabbis of the Talmud define fear. There is mention of fear of God, but it's more in the sense of awe, not that I'm afraid that God is going to do something to me, but that being in the presence of such tremendous power is unsettling for any human creature.
I've often been troubled with the fact
that that's the fear of God as it somewhat is.
But that's way different from Christianity, where we basically believe in Jesus or you're fucked. I mean, it's sort of like Stockholm syndrome, not belief. You can't, and I know that people say that's a huge tradition in some stripes of Christianity. Get them into heaven by scaring the hell out of them. But the problem is, you can only scare somebody so far.
Right.
But it's such a, and I've dealt with my own Christian guilt. Charles has helped me just, you know, move on. But it's so prevalent in our faith, mine and yours, Sarah. But I don't know. That seems like a topic for more discussion. Charles?
Well, I think so, and that's one of the reasons why we're actually trying to put together what would probably be a year-long series, I think, of podcasts, because we have so many people who want to comment on it. This idea of, is an interfaith space something that is going to be important for the future of American Christianity and church? And if so, what can we share that doesn't become cultural appropriation or the death knell for either faith?
I don't think Judaism feels they're competing.
No, we
Christians
don't at
would
all.
Say that.
I'm saying we don't at all. My concern is in that, and I was talking with Kristen and Joe Mitchell after Beer and Hymns about it, and they're in on this discussion. They're all for it. It is, you know, my fear is for Christianity, because it almost sets up the reverse of, you know, the Christian line to Jews in trying to convert us of, oh, well, we believe the same thing, so why don't we just accept Christ and we'll all be Christian? It's almost the reverse with some people with, oh, well, why don't we just practice, quote, the faith of Jesus, and then we'll just all be Jewish. You know, that just doesn't make sense either, because they are not the same thing. And you and I have talked about this. We've written
right.
about
there's no recovery of the actual story of Jesus.
Yeah, and
that is lost.
There are deep fundamental theological differences in the faiths. Anyway, that's for another time.
Right. Well, I it just struck me as just, there's so much when we were talking about this at Wild Goose and the notion of interfaith. And Sarah, we use that phrase because we discovered a long time ago in our relationship that there is no such thing as interfaith. There either is Judaism, there is Christianity, there is a particular religion, but this sort of amalgamation and just cramming things together for the sake of false unity, we're just not down with. Mm-hmm. And we've had a better relationship because, first and foremost, I've never tried to convert Charles, and he's neither tried to convert me.
Yeah,
it's just simply not on the table.
Right. And also, you'll appreciate as an English major that we changed it from an adjective to a verbal. Because then it becomes interfaith becomes something you do, mm-hmm. and not something that is.
Right.
So rather than it being a descriptor, it's something you engage in.
Yeah, I have to say I'm not really a big fan of that word either.
Yeah.
I use it because people are familiar with it. It's common, but I don't describe myself as an interfaith person. Mm. I have a faith. There's nothing inter about it, really. It's just, it has influences from elsewhere, but that's not the same as combining two theologies together. So.
Right, exactly. And that's why we've made that distinction and why we capitalize the ED to point out that, no, this is something different. Mm-hmm. You know, when we have these discussions, it's about exploration and learning, but it's doing that for the benefit of my faith, not to join our faiths together and create something different.
Well, I wonder if that's some of that, the trajectory of, I'm just mindful of and I'm forgetting the name. It's, I want to say Foster Fowler. This sort of basically takes the Erickson psychosocial development, but mm-hmm. does it for spirituality.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That sort of highest level. And that may be a misquote. This one won James Fowler. That was a good Methodist. Where you get to at the end, I think people that would disparage it would call it universalism. I've experienced this. I'm just no longer concerned. That's not my biggest concern or question of whether I'm right, who's someone else is right and wrong. I've just moved beyond, and Charles has helped me with this, beyond denomination, beyond
binaries,
not confusing Christianity with the church, mm-hmm. Or religion with any institution for that matter. That's not like something more Charles would say. It's your faith versus the institution that promotes it.
Yeah.
Usually that's slurred because he's had one too many scotches, so I can't do it justice. But
yeah, no, I'm not drinking tonight because I actually have to go to work tomorrow and sit through faculty meetings all day long.
So you'll be drinking tomorrow, is what you're saying?
No, because then I got to do it again on Friday and Monday, so I'll be drinking Tuesday before I have class on Wednesday.
Right. Well, you've got the weekend planned.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
No drink on Shabbos.
Oh God! Don't get him started. Everything on Shabbos.
Yeah. There's definitely the wine Friday night, but there's other things, as Chris knows, because it's a double mitzvah on Shabbos. So that's the only thing that Chris has thought about that he might think about converting to Judaism.
The whole circumcision thing, and then pork. Come on. I can't do it.
Yeah, but you get to have sex twice on Shabbos. Double mitzvah. Anyway, so Sarah, thank you for sharing your journey, and I actually look forward. You have like all of our guests, you have an open invitation.
Oh, thank you.
To be part of our podcast, and definitely want to include your voice in what will be an ongoing discussion of where there can be influence without attempting to amalgamate, because I think that's a good way of putting it. That you
well, did. And we one of our struggles, Sarah, and you may be able to. Of course,
by
English
the way,
major.
She's being too polite, Sarah Beth.
Sarah
or okay. Beth, not Sarah.
I have trouble with names.
I go by Beth.
Yes.
Beth.
Not in the books.
With Charles and I, one of our discussions, and I thought I was super prepared for it, only to find that clearly I was not an English major and did not take language as seriously. Is that we lacked words to express what we're doing. Yeah. There wasn't a common shared language to finally get that out when I couldn't speak any language there for a second, but I didn't have the language to communicate with him on this sort of, what is this liminal space between our faiths, where there's interaction, there's differences, but I don't have those words yet.
Well, speaking of words, as always, going to end with words of wisdom, as always, for those of you who are frequent listener of our podcast, know that
all six
words are always chosen with no particular agenda or hidden meaning.
No,
they're
we're beyond that.
We're beyond that.
Yeah, we're.
And this actually, I picked this because I saw this last week was Shimon Peres's birthday last week.
Already?
Yeah. So I went back and got one of his great quotes, and he famously said, "You know who is against democracy in the Middle East? The husbands. They got used to their way of life. Now, the traditional way of life must change. Everybody must change. If you don't give equal rights to women, you can't progress."
Well, I'm Chris Henson, and I'm still the Gentile.
And I'm Charles Breton, and I'm still the Jew.
Join us on our next episode, where you can listen to a Jew and a Gentile walk into a bar mitzvah.
Special thanks to Ethan Sapphire for letting us use his song Shoulda Woulda Coulda as our theme. You can download Ethan's music at soundclick.com/Ethan Sapphire. Shoulda woulda coulda, but I didn't, that's for real. You can't get back the hand if you didn't like the deal. You made your choices, you gotta live with that. If you learn from your mistakes, you'll get another chance at that.